Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Huegesa. The weather is very hot, and everyone is persevering with this study till the last talks, and so I congratulate you and thank you for your faith in the teachings that you come out again like this. The last time we met, we talked chapter 27 and 28, and I just wanted to look at it again. So basically, the Diamond Sutra is insight into the Bodhisattva way. How should we, as the first chapter says, how do we comport ourselves like Buddhas? How do we live like Buddhas? How do we become Buddhas? How do we function as Buddha? What is Buddha? That's the meaning, that's the question, that's the teaching of the Diamond Sutra. It's very simple, actually. So as I said, at the very first talk we had, the whole Diamond Sutra is in this first chapter of the Diamond Sutra. The entire sutra, the meaning of the whole sutra is in the first chapter. Then Subhuti asks, how do we live like that? This mindful mind, this no-thinking mind. How do we live moment to moment to moment to moment, leaving behind? Leaving no scent, no color, no quality behind. How do we live this very clean life, like transparent glass, like empty air? How do we live like that? How do we live this blameless existence? So that's what Subhuti's asking. It's very simple. So the Buddha gets up, does his business, comes back, and Subhuti sees that and says, I want to be like you. How do I do it? And so the Buddha gives many, many different ways of saying, don't attach to names. Don't attach to charity. Don't attach to time or space, present mind, past mind, future mind. Don't attach to any kind of mind or I or ego or separate personality. Don't attach to Buddha. Don't attach to anything that's already Buddha. That itself is Buddha. So we say in Korean Buddhism, we say, Songbul Hashipsyo, may you become Buddha. Actually, that's a mistake. According to the Diamond Sutra, Songbul Hashipsyo is wrong. It's not correct teaching. May you become Buddha. But according to the view of the Diamond Sutra, which is the true view, you are already Buddha. How can Buddha become Buddha? That's like saying to a Korean person, may you become Korean. Or an American person, may you become American. Then they would look at you, you stupid, I'm already Korean, I'm already American. So the teaching of the Diamond Sutra is we already Buddha, already complete, already perfectly empty. We say attain emptiness, but actually already fundamentally empty. There's no holiness apart from that. So when the emperor asks Bodhidharma, I have built many temples, I have done many great things for Buddhism. I have given much food and money to the temples and the monks and supported them and caused many people to become monks and supported their study. How much merit did I make? How much spiritual money do I have in the bank? And Bodhidharma said, nothing. Absolutely zero. Gong. Zero. Then the emperor said, oh, that's incredible you say that. How can you say that? Because all of the teachings have said that if I do these good things, I get great merit. Yeah, in any tradition, they have that sort of teaching. How can you say that? What is the highest teaching of Buddhism then? If getting good merit and good like plus and plus and plus and this kind of accumulation of spiritual worth, if that's not the highest teaching of Buddhism, what's the highest teaching of Buddhism? And Bodhidharma says, no holiness, only completely vast empty space. It's like that. What Buddhism is pointing to, what Buddhism is talking about, is like that. It's vast empty space. Just like that. That's it. Rather than getting something or making something, making merit, making this, rather than that, it's attaining vast empty space like that, that your nature is like vast empty space. Attain that. And that is the highest point of Buddhism that you've attained. And of course the emperor is extremely upset now, because he's done all this hard work, he's taken all this cash and given it to temples and made many people become monks, and he's expecting he has all this value so that he'll become maybe emperor again, next life, next life, next life, next life, emperor again, next life, next life. Now Bodhidharma says, nothing, nothing. So he's very upset. And he says, how can you say that? Who are you? Who are you? You can say that to me. And Bodhidharma says, don't know. Wow. Even this Bodhidharma is not Bodhidharma anymore. It's not, I am Bodhidharma. I practiced a long time. That's how I can say that to you. Not the name. I'm from India. Yeah, that time Buddhism came from India, right? India was the home of Buddhism. He's like an expert. It's kind of like someone from Korea going to America and making kimchi, and someone says, oh, this is terrible. How can you make this? Well, I'm from Korea. Bodhidharma doesn't say to the emperor, I understand Buddhism. I'm from India. He doesn't roll that up because there's no I. There's no Bodhidharma even. So when the emperor says, who are you? How can you say this? Are you out of your mind? Who are you? Bodhidharma says, don't know. So he returns the emperor right back to that point. This fundamental emptiness. Don't know. No name, no form. So that's the teaching of the Diamond Sutra. It's very simple. It's really clear. So we're going to look at the last several chapters today. And actually, to be honest with you, the Diamond Sutra is very interesting because it repeats the same teaching, basically the same teaching over and over again from different points of view. It's like here behind Hwagisa, we are in Samgaksan, and we have Insubong, the peak. And if you look at this peak, this very amazing peak of Insubong, it has a shape, a very special kind of shape as far as peaks go. But most people take pictures of Insubong from one angle, from the front facing Samgaksan. But if you look at other pictures of Insubong taken from behind by Wijongbu, back by Kupabal maybe, that area, back around, if you take different pictures of Insubong, you see that Insubong has a very different quality, even though it's the same point, but from different angles, when seen differently, this same point has a kind of refreshing view all the time. So the Buddha actually in the Diamond Sutra is saying the same thing over and over and over again. And over again. I told you, the first chapter of the Diamond Sutra is the whole sutra. There's nothing else that's necessary. So, many people don't get that, maybe. So the Buddha said, I'll talk about it this way. Then next chapter. Okay, we'll talk about it this way. Then next chapter. Okay, we'll talk about it this way. So that's what the Diamond Sutra is, more or less. It's basically the same fundamental teaching of emptiness. Non-attachment to appearances. Non-expectation of the merits of charity. That's all. So let's look again. Where we left off. Let's look at chapter 28. Chapter 28. Attachment to the rewards of merit. Sabuti, if one bodhisattva bestows in charity sufficient of the seven treasures to fill as many worlds as there be sand grains in the river Ganges, and another, realizing that all things are egoless, attains perfection through patient forbearance, the merit of the latter will far exceed that of the former. Why is this, Sabuti? It is because all bodhisattvas are insentient as to the rewards of merit. Then Sabuti said to Buddha, what is this saying, world-honored one, that bodhisattvas are insentient as to rewards of merit? And the Buddha answered, Sabuti, bodhisattvas who achieve merit should not be fettered with desire for rewards. Thus it is said that the rewards of merit are not received. The rewards of merit are not received. They're very interesting. Every one of us does good things every day. Every day we do things. Well, good, bad, we don't need to judge it that way. But every day we do things. And because we live in a world of other human beings and other life, we do things for other people and for other creatures. And it's very hard not to be attached to some return from that, to expect something, some good opinion, some reward, some thank you, something to come back from that, whether it's in your job, some credit for a project you did well at work, something from your family, some thanks, some gratitude, some praise. So it's very hard not to expect that. And most of us, all of us, I would say, from habit, expect that. It's very few, very, very, very few people don't expect anything. So what he's talking about is no possession, no attachment to merit. No attachment to the merit, the fruit of charity. So charity can be boshi. Boshi has many forms, boshi, this charity mind. It's giving money, maybe. Maybe it's calling your friend. Maybe recently, one of the members of our community, their father died, and some of you went to the hospital very early in the morning to do some chanting and to be there and to do practicing together. That's a great boshi mind. So it's not only from lay believers to monks. It's not only from Shindo to Sanims. Boshi is this everyday mind of just connecting with people. You know, in Christianity we have boshi too. You know, I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was in prison and you visited me. That's this basic, even Jesus emphasizes this basic boshi mind. This mind of charity, of giving, of oneself. Body, mind, and possessions. But the temptation is to expect something back from that. Expect something back. And so this teaching is, don't expect anything back. Don't attach to whether you get back or don't get back. Because if you do get something back, you'll always measure it against your effort. Well, I did this much, I only got this much back. Well, I did it 5 times for them, why didn't they do it 2 times for me? So, very tricky situation. So the Buddha says, no possession, no attachment to anything. Why? Because even the charity we gave is not real. The thing we did is fundamentally not real. You gave counseling to your friend 1 week ago. Where is that? Where is that now? What is it now? You gave something, some money to the temple, or maybe you brought some food to your friend in the hospital. Where is that now? It's not a thing. It doesn't exist. You can't hold it. You can't smell it. You can't taste it. You can't pick it up. You can't take a picture of it. Yeah, maybe you gave some gift. Maybe you can take a picture of the gift, but that's not charity. Real boshi is the mind of giving. So, that mind of giving, yeah, you gave something, but that mind of giving doesn't exist. So, don't be attached to the reward, the return from that. That's fundamentally true. That's the physics of charity, if you will. If everything's made up of particular matter, of particle matter, that particle of giving, where is that now? It doesn't exist. You can't find it anywhere in this universe. So, if you get involved in attachment to rewards, want some kind of return, you get suffering. It's an illusion, wishing for a return from an illusion. That's an illusion. So, Subhuti, if one bodhisattva bestows in charity sufficient of the 7 treasures to fill as many worlds as there be sands in the river Ganges, if you give so much wealth and jewels and precious things, one person, and another person And there's two people. One gives huge amounts of money, many billions of dollars, one person. And then a second person just attains that everything has no self-nature. Of the two people, one person giving away vast amounts of money, and another person simply realizing in this moment that everything is fundamentally not real, fundamentally has no self-nature, so self-existent nature. Of those two people, the one who made that realization has the greater merit. Quote unquote, has the greater merit. So, and another, realizing that all things are egoless, all dharmas, all laws, all thank yous, all no thank yous. The credit you get, the credit you don't get, are both without, they don't have any quality. The merit of the second person will far exceed that of the first person. Why is this, Subhuti? It is because all bodhisattvas are insentient as to the rewards of merit. All bodhisattvas don't give a darn about merit. That was the same in the teachings of Christianity, in the teachings of Islam. It's also the same teaching here in Buddhism. Don't attach to the return you get from anything you do. If you do that, you're free. Then you'll just function. When someone is hungry, you'll just give them food. The next day they're hungry, you just give them food. The next day they're hungry, you just give them food. They never say thank you. Next day they're hungry, you just give them food. That's this egoless function. But if you're calculating, well, I gave them food 3 times, 4 times, I gave them food, but they gave me a kind of a cupcake in return. Maybe next time I don't do that. Then already your compassion is not true compassion. It's based on conditions. So it's not true compassion. It's not true boshi. But if you realize that giving and the giver and the recipient are fundamentally empty, then this giving can just happen. You can see this boundless compassion, this functioning just happens. Because it doesn't have a limit, it doesn't have a boundary, it doesn't have a quality, a weight, a deficiency, a lacking. It's very interesting, this teaching. So, Buddhist teaching is based on emptiness. When we say that, we mean it. That realization of the fundamental emptiness of all matter and all things means liberation. From liberation is this functioning possible. Then Subhuti said to the Buddha, "What are you saying, world honor one? What is this, that bodhisattvas are insentient as to the rewards of merit? What does this mean? How can you say that? That they don't care about that? Where does that come from?" And the Buddha answered, "Subhuti, bodhisattvas who achieve merit should not be limited, should not be fettered with desire for rewards. Thus it is said that the rewards of merit are not received." The rewards of merit are not received. Where is it? Even you got thank you from somebody, where is it anyway? Even someone said, "Oh, thank you very much. Oh, you are wonderful. Thank you very much. Why, you are so wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you. You came to the temple and helped us for... Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you." Where is that? Where? Where? Where do you keep it? Where do you hold it? Where do you store it? Where does it go? So, it's fundamentally empty anyway, so don't expect it. Then you're free. Then somebody loves you, you can help them. Someone hates you, you can help them. That mind is true compassion, is true boshi. Okay? So, does anyone have any questions about that? No questions? Wonderful. Chapter 29. It's very interesting. We talked about that this Diamond Sutra is 32 chapters. The Diamond Sutra is 32 chapters, this. Why is it 32 chapters? Why not 33, 34, 2, 8, none? It's 32 chapters because many people believed that the Buddha or any holy person had 32 special characteristics. 32 special characteristics. It's like an action hero. An action hero for a movie. An action hero for a movie has got to be big, strong, tough looking, maybe can handle a gun, nowadays sunglasses. There's some qualities of an action hero. If some guy comes out for an action, you go to a movie theater about the greatest action, called the greatest action hero, and the movie starts, and the actor is this guy who is kind of about very small and very skinny, and has just like a pocket of pens, and he's always always brushing his hair away like this, and is very nervous, and when a fly goes, then you think, that's not an action hero. Everybody expects an action hero to look or be a certain way. That's why sometimes these action hero guys, when they try to do like a comedy movie or something else, people go, no. He's only an action hero actor. So, also people expected a Buddha to have certain qualities. 32 qualities. So if the person had these qualities, that's a Buddha. Same thing in different religions. People expected a saint or something to have certain qualities. So, 32 qualities of the Buddha. Because of these people believed in these 32 qualities of the Buddha, the Diamond Sutra is 32 chapters. Because what the Diamond Sutra is pointing at radically is not those 32 characteristics. One is long ears. Another is curly, this curly special kind of hair. One is a certain kind of something, nose or eyes, color. Not that. The Diamond Sutra is hitting that. It's saying, not that 32 characteristics. This. The real Buddha is this. But if you think that means the real Buddha is a book, or the real Buddha are the words on this page, that Diamond Sutra, no, it's also that, not that Diamond Sutra. The real Buddha is what these 32 chapters are pointing to. Very interesting, yeah? So, it totally explodes this 32 idea. So, chapter 29 is a good example of this. What is the real Buddha? What is the true Buddha? Those days, people had many strong ideas about what Buddha is. Chapter 29 looks at that. So, chapter 29, perfect tranquility. Sabuddhi, the Buddha says, Sabuddhi, if anyone should say that the Tathagata, Yode, comes or goes or sits or reclines, he fails to understand my teaching. Why? Because Tathagata has neither whence nor whither, here or there. Tathagata has neither here nor there. Therefore, it is called Tathagata. Very interesting. So, people thought that Tathagata, Buddha, is a man. That's a mistake. Maybe it's a woman. That's a mistake. Maybe it's a human being. That's a mistake. Maybe it's a saint. That's a mistake. So I tell this story. The Buddha got enlightenment and was sitting under the tree down the road. As he was walking down the road, a farmer came to him from the opposite direction, leading a cow, and saw it and said, "Are you a god?" And he said, the young man said, "No, I'm not a god." And then the man said, well, are you a demigod? No, I'm not a demigod. Well, are you a saint? No, I'm not a saint. Are you a teacher, a master? No, I'm not a master. Well, then are you a man? No, I'm not a man. Then he said, well, then are you a human being? And the Buddha said, no, I'm not a human being. And then the farmer asked, then what are you? Who are you? What are you? What kind of thing? What are you? Who? And Buddha said, I am awake. Woke up, is what he said. He just said, woke up. So that quality, that's Buddha. Waking up, that's Buddha. Waking up itself, paying attention itself, that's Buddha. So this is pointing to that. What is true Buddha? That time people thought it had to be a man. Human being. But true Buddha is not that. It's a very famous saying. Whatever wakes you up, that's a bodhisattva. Whatever wakes you up to this moment, that's a bodhisattva. And when you wake up, that's a Buddha. Just that waking up itself, that's Buddha. So, most times, we just follow our thinking. We're lost in our thinking, our yesterday thinking, tomorrow thinking, our monk thinking, our school thinking, our home thinking, our work thinking, our any kind of thinking, anger thinking, fear thinking, worry thinking. That's asleep, because that's all an illusion. It's not real. But the minute you wake up and hear the sound of that fan, that waking up, that's a Buddha. That's the point of the Diamond Sutra. So very simple. Sabuti, if anyone should say that the Tathagata is Yore, you know, we say Yore Bull, Yore, thus come. If anyone says that the Buddha comes or goes or sits or reclines, that's wrong. That's wrong. So people thought a Buddha was a human being. Human beings come and go. They sit down, they lie down. But the Buddha is hitting that. He's saying a real Buddha, that's not really a real Buddha. Real Buddha is not something that does that. A Buddha is wake-upness. Wake-up experience. That's Buddha. It's not a form. It's not a person, a personality. It's not any of that. It's not a religion. It's just the mind that's paying attention. What Tibetan Buddhists call pure awareness. Our pure awareness, that's Buddha. Our pure awareness that doesn't need a book. It doesn't need a religion. It doesn't need a teaching. It doesn't need anything to function. That is Buddha. So, it's very interesting too, because the word yore in Sanskrit means thus come, or thus going. Tata agata. It can mean thus coming. But that word itself suggests something appears. Something comes. But true awareness doesn't come, doesn't go. When you hear this sound, the thing that heard that, the quality, the being, the something that hears that, that doesn't come or go. It's always there. It's always there. It's always functioning. Just you don't pay attention to it. You follow the shadows of your thinking mind, so that thing looks like, I lost myself for a second there. What did you say? But it was always paying attention. It's always aware. So, Sabuti, if anyone should say that the Tathagata comes or goes or sits or reclines, he fails to understand my teaching. So, if you think Buddha is that, you fail to understand Buddha's teaching. It's not that. That's also pointing to it, but it's not that. That over there, that form, that shape, that thing, that idea. It's not that. It's what that is pointing to. right here. So when you wake up, when you see, that's Buddha. When you hear, that's Buddha. When you smell, that's Buddha. When you taste, that's Buddha. When you feel, this fan on my face, that's Buddha. Okay? Very simple. So, Subhuti, if anyone should say that the Tathagata comes or goes or sits or reclines, he fails to understand my teaching. Why? Because Tathagata, this yore, this awareness, has no here or there. It has no here or there. And you, I'm aware you're not aware. I'm aware. You're not aware. It has not that. Because it's the same awareness. That yore that you have, quote unquote, and the yore that I have, the yore that one person experiences, the yore that another experiences, they're not two different things. They're not two different yore. They're not two different Buddhas. They're not two different qualities. They're not two different abilities. How do we know that? How can we prove that? How do we prove that it's the same yore? That experience. That moment, everyone experiences the same yore. Everyone's hearing is the same. That's yore. It didn't come, it didn't go. It's still there, here. Okay? So very simple. This Diamond Sutra, I don't know why people think it's difficult. It's very clear and very, very, very direct. So, true Buddha is that awareness. That's all. So it's, I like the title of this chapter, Perfect Tranquility. That perfect, that our fundamental thing, it's perfectly tranquil. It doesn't need to calm down. It doesn't need to rest. It's fundamentally clear as it is, and it always functions. Do you think it functioned already a minute ago, that it doesn't function anymore? That experience. This experience doesn't come or go. Yore, this coming, not going. It's already very clear right in front of you. Right in front of your eyes, right in front of your ears, right in front of your nose, right in front of your tongue, right in front of your body, right in front of your mind. Okay? Very simple. So, the true Buddha is not the kind of Buddha that comes or goes like a human being, yeah? The Buddha, if you think the Buddha was 2,500 years ago, that's not the true Buddha, because that Buddha came into this world and left. That's a Buddha's body. But that's not the true Buddha, because the true Buddha never comes, never goes. It's just that right there. So any religion that teaches true God was, you know, God came among us and walked among us 2,000 years ago. There's a song I used to have to sing when I was a kid in church. Oh, the days when God walked among us. What kind of BS is that? If he walked among us, it wasn't true God. Because true God has no past, present, or future. Human beings think past, present, future, Monday, Tuesday, last week, next month. But true God, true Buddha, no time, no space. It's always right here in this experience. Okay? That's yore. That's Tathagata. That's Buddha. Okay? So, this perfect tranquility, you want to experience that, try meditation. Very helpful for that. Chapter 30. The integral principle. This is very interesting. This chapter is a kind of a scientific style explanation. Subhuti, if a good man or a good woman ground in an infinite number of galaxies of worlds to dust, would the resulting minute particles be many? Subhuti replied, many indeed, world-honored one. Wherefore? Because if such were really minute particles, Buddha would not have spoken of them as minute particles. For as to this, Buddha has declared that they are not really such. Minute particles, tiny, tiny, tiny particles, is just the name given to them. It's just the name for them. Also, world-honored one, when the Tathagata speaks of galaxies of worlds, these are not worlds. For if reality could be predicated of a world, it would be a self-existent cosmos. And the Tathagata teaches that there is really no such thing. Cosmos is merely a figure of speech. Then Buddha declared, Subhuti, words cannot explain the real nature of a cosmos. Words cannot express the real nature of the universe. Words cannot express the real nature of universe. Only common people fettered with desire make use of this arbitrary method. It's very simple, sounds a little complicated, but actually it's very, very, very simple, as we shall see. So this is kind of, this chapter kind of talks a lot like particle physics, or kind of a lot like of the nature of kind of universal substance is the way this talks. But actually it's really very, very, very simple. In Buddhist teaching, entities, anything, only exists in relation to something else. Something only exists in relation to something else. So a classic example is that sound of that moktak outside right now. You think that moktak sound is there. You think it's there. To you, it's there. But if someone covers their ears, that moktak sound does not exist. Its existence, quote unquote, is created only by mind. So, in classic Buddhist teaching, things exist only according to their relation to other things. They don't have any fundamental independent existence. They don't. Ask a dead person about the moktak sound. To that dead person, the moktak sound does not exist. Ask someone living in Busan right now, call your friend in Busan and say, hey, that moktak sound at Hwagaesa, what do you think about it? Oh, no moktak sound at Hwagaesa. But he's there. He's there, but he doesn't come into contact with this moktak sound, so this moktak sound is just an idea to him. It doesn't exist. Very simple. But we think things exist, so they exist. Fear exists because we think it exists. Anger exists because we think it exists. Objects exist because we think they exist. Success, ambition, regret, all of it exists because we think it into existence. But actually, they fundamentally don't exist. So, let's look at this a little bit closely. Subhuti, if a man or woman, a man or a good woman ground an infinite number of galaxies of worlds to dust, would the resulting atoms, is a good way to put it, would the resulting atoms, wanja, would the resulting atoms be many? Would there be many atoms if you took infinite number of galaxies and ground it up into dust? And Subhuti says, well, of course, teacher. Wherefore? Because if such were really minute particles, Buddha would not have spoken of them as minute particles. So, we say that atom is an atom. Substance is substance. Objects are objects, but in fact they are not. I always use this example. Always use this. We say this is form. But if you take this form, right now this form is changing. It has no nature. It has no fundamental nature. This desk has no fundamental quality. It has no fundamental self-existent entity, quality. It doesn't. You think it does, but it doesn't. Because if you take this and you burn it, you reduce it to chemical components of ash, carbon, nitrogen, hydrogen, whatever. And then if you look at those molecules are made up of atoms, and those atoms have subatomic particles, yeah, plus, minus, neutral, protons, neutrons, and electron. And if you looked at those, there's subatomic particles, and those are called quarks. And if you look at a quark, it's not there. The nature of this substance is that it doesn't exist. Actually, by physics, according to physics, it doesn't really exist. And yet, it makes this desk. And you think this desk is here. But even while it's here, the thing that I'm hitting doesn't have a substance that stands by itself. It exists in relation to thinking. It exists in relation to thinking. Descartes said the same thing. I think, therefore I am. I think, therefore this I is. I comes from thinking. Everything comes from thinking. I, you. So we say, this is a desk. But this desk never said, I'm a desk. Hello, desk. What are you?
No answer yet.
Maybe one of these microphones will work. Maybe we hold the microphone up very closely. Nope, no answer from here. No answer from here. No answer. American person says desk. Korean person says cheksang. Or maybe kyeongsangde? I don't know. Cheksang. But this never said that. So everything you call it, everything you name it, is not its true name. It's just an idea. So the whole existence that we create about desk is entirely made by thinking. There's no fundamental, independent existence of this apart from your thinking. So that's the basic teaching of this chapter.